I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Current Geek, the talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world. And you, I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt.
Yes, I am, Scott, and I gavel us into another session of Current Geek discussions. We have brought you a fine selection of some of the geekiest topics on the internet.
I agree. I think these look really good, and it's no small part due to both the fans and Tom, who constructs our notes. I don't know if anyone knows, but Tom does this really great job with notes. It's almost as if he's been doing this for 1,000 years.
It's a calling.
Yeah. Good job.
When I was a young boy, the priest took me aside and said, do you hear the call? And I said, yes, Father, I am going to become a podcast preparer. And he said, that's great too.
Yeah, that's fine. Go do some altar boy things and then let's get on to this note writing. Anyway, it's fantastic to be back. We got a good old news show for you today, everybody. So we're very excited about it. Before we get too far, we dive into these. Whoop. Here's Scott doing his thing again. Here we go.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom?
In a paper published in Scientific Reports, scientists from Columbia University and the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution described 10 days on a research ship towing electromagnetic sensors from New Jersey to Massachusetts. That may not sound like fun to you, but it's fun to a lot of people. And it's out on the ocean. You're not on the highway, so that makes a difference. Sure. By measuring the way electromagnetic waves traveled through fresh and saline water, that's salt water, researchers mapped out freshwater reservoirs under the ocean for the first time. Subterranean pools of fresh water stretch for at least 50 miles off the U.S. Atlantic coast, starting at least 600 feet below the sea floor. So what happened was glaciers melted, pools happened, and then oceans swam in, and these pools got trapped under the sediment as the sediment came above it, meaning they didn't mix in with the ocean water and get all salty. Now, it's not quite pure fresh water like you would have on land, but it would still be easier to desalinate than straight ocean water. It ranges from pretty close to fresh water near the land, and then the farther you go out in the pool, the more ocean water is maybe seeped in a little bit, and it gets a little saltier. But at its worst, it's only 50% as salty as ocean water.
So do you think, does this in fact or in effect stave off the long predicted unforecast water wars that we've talked about for years?
It very well might delay it a little bit. Now, we found these in the United States. It doesn't seem like it would be impossible to find them in other parts of the world. Now it's a matter of figuring out, how do we access them? Can we pump the water out? If we do, what are the consequences of that? What are the negative consequences of getting this fresh water? But it's a huge amount of fresh water, which is a problem. I mean, we have a planet that's mostly water, and yet we don't have enough of the water we need as ugly bags of mostly water to keep ourselves alive, because the ocean water is too salty for us.
Right. And we still haven't got to a point where we can desalt it, like you
Not
said earlier.
Not efficiently enough to make it worthwhile yet. I mean, that's still on the table out there. It's just real costly to desalinate.
Yeah. If that ever happens, by the way, that'll be great. Because with all the other things that we chew up and spit out, and we're all out of natural resources and we've mined everything and we're going to run out, it'd be really cool if we found out a way to have at least that one life-saving, life-giving material have a sort of an endless supply, because the ocean would be pretty endless.
I remember when I learned about people dying of thirst while trapped at sea.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was probably some, 18th century exploration I was reading about, and it hit me like, wow, the world really is messed up. You can die from thirst surrounded by water. Mm-hmm. It was a change in the way I perceived the world when I learned that.
Yeah.
So if we could make that like, oh no, we've come up with this crazy technology that'll get the salt out really easy and cheaply. You just fill up your thermos with salt water, shake it a couple of times, and boom, you got fresh water.
I would love that. I think that's a future that we should aim for. And whoever needs to figure it out, great. But maybe this is the stepping stone, because we got this somewhat unsalty water that we could fiddle with.
The question I have for you, Scott.
Yeah.
And I know that you can't entirely answer this yourself. You're at the mercy of other people's plans.
Okay.
But the next time you're in Los Angeles, will you do your best to come see the Water World exhibition at Universal Studios theme park?
Yes, because for years, everybody keeps saying it's actually good.
It's really good.
Yeah.
And if you actually like Water World,
yeah.
It only would be better.
I feel like I've been a bad steward of all things Waterworld because I do love that movie, even though I know it's kind of bad. But there's so much to like about it. And the fact that I was right near there for a while and didn't go in a family vacation form back in 2006. I totally easily could have gone. And mm-hmm. we didn't go because I can't remember. The kids were tired or there's some other reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we didn't
it's costly. You know, it's not cheap to get in if you don't plan ahead or have a local discount pass or whatever.
Right. But you're speaking my language. That place is cool. I'm a little surprised it's still going. It must be because it's good.
Because it's good. Yeah. And I hope, I haven't checked in a while that they haven't replaced it with something else. But, you know, if they were, I can't imagine what. Because the whole thing was... It was just a way to show off amazing stunts. And everybody comes in joking, like, oh, we're seeing the Waterworld thing. And then they walk out like, that was amazing. Because mm-hmm. things get set on fire and a plane crashes and people, you know, swing on ropes all over the place. You could call it whatever and people would be impressed.
It's probably the most Mad Max kind of experience I'm ever going to get exposed to at a theme park.
And honestly, you could take that exact same show and just rebrand it. Mad Max Fury Road, mm-hmm. it would be just as good and you would be just as happy.
Yeah. And you could pump a lot of water out of there and make it more of a desert if you had to. But it says here that it is still the number one rated attraction at California's Universal Studios.
I cannot believe that it's rated higher than Harry Potter.
This is what it says.
All right.
It says Universal Studios themselves on their own website say this. Yeah. Experience Waterworld, Universal Studios' number one rated show. Join the adventure that surges to life with jumping jet skiers, perilous plunges, firefights, massive explosions, and in-your-face plane crash that you need to see to believe.
That's them saying that to try to convince you to go in, right?
Right. I mean, rated, who rates it is my question. Like, is there a rating? Can people send in a little card that says, "But I like the most"?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I gotta think the big attraction is Harry Potter now, and this is second, but come on.
The Harry Potter World, and everybody from Orlando is like, our Harry Potter World sucks in Hollywood. So what? If we have the second best Harry Potter World in the world, it's still pretty darn good.
I'll take it.
And it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I guess they had a reopening of the Water World attraction in April 2017. So it's even improved.
Oh, it's relatively recent.
Water worldier.
Oh, more water, more world, probably.
They have it in Hollywood, but they also have it in Universal Studios Japan and Singapore.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? Well done. The movie, got panned. It kind of was a tanker at the box office. It's only loved by a few of us who just appreciate its setting more than its actual execution. It's nice to see a part of it, lived on and did well.
It replaced the Miami Vice Action Spectacular in 1995.
As it should have. I mean, come on. That thing shouldn't be allowed to stick around. I never went to that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Miami Vice Action Spectacular.
I think I went once while that existed, but never saw it.
Boom, boom, boom.
There you go.
Get your gun. Warner Media's streaming service has ordered Dune the Sisterhood, showrunner, or at least direction of the pilot by Denis Villeneuve. He's the one directing the Dune movie that is yet to come out. Mm-hmm. John Spates is set to write. Spates writing the screenplay for the film. So they got the director and the screenwriter of the Dune movie that is coming out to at least write the first, direct the first episode and write the first episode of Dune, the Sisterhood, about the Bene Gesserit, which is the sisterhood from Dune. Dune's film reboot's coming November 20th, 2020. We don't have a firm date on the Warner Media streaming service, but I assume this sisterhood would come out after the movie, so expect it sometime after November 2020.
And is that streaming service, that's not a thing I can get now? Have they launched the services?
Okay. They haven't launched it yet.
Okay. And we don't know when that is.
No. In fact, there's all kinds of rumors about what they're going to price it to because they want to include HBO in it, but HBO is already $15 a month, and that seems pretty high. So, yeah.
Sure. I mean, you could... So that makes it seem like it's going to definitely be more than 15 if they're going to bundle that as a straight up bundle. I would probably, I might do it because I'm already getting HBO for 15. And if you gave it, if you gave me that plus,
my guess is they'll do it like 18 or something like that.
Jeez, that's a lot.
And really try to play up all the DC content they're going to put in it.
Well, because the DC streaming service isn't performing like they thought. We talked about this somewhere, right? Somewhere. Mm-hmm. So they're going to roll that in and make it a bigger, more daunting thing. Whatever. All I know is, forget about all that. Here's what matters. Dune is being made in a modern context. I don't mean the setting of the story. I mean being made, you know, special effects and directors of our time.
1985.
is being film made in a time where we really know how to make movies now, especially this kind of genre stuff. And Denis Villeneuve is one of my favorite modern directors, if not my favorite. He makes everything good, and I've not disliked anything he's ever made. So I have huge faith in him, especially after Blade Runner. I thought that Blade Runner 2049 was amazing.
Kind of looked like Dune.
A lot like Dune.
In that Vegas part anyway.
Yeah. Lots of sand dunes. You're only missing some worms, really. But I have all the faith in the world in him. So I'm excited on that level alone. When I heard that there was a follow-up television series and that he would be have his hands in it and people involved in the project would have their hands in it, I'm over the moon about it. I think this is a great reason for me to even care about a Warner Brothers streaming service. Like, there are two things I want out of a Warner Brothers streaming service, and it's going to be sad to hear this. Well, three things. I want Dune stuff. I want all of the animated DC stuff is excellent. They do great jobs over there on that stuff. So all of that is very compelling to me.
And then TBS adult women comedies.
No, unfortunately, no. Okay. My other one is I want a huge old archive of Warner Brothers cartoons. I want all the good stuff, and I want it. I want it in the best possible form.
You're right. Yeah.
I would love that. I'd sit and watch that all day. So maybe they got me here because this Dune thing is the best news I've heard in a while.
Well, I mean, first of all, like you, I'm very optimistic about Denis Villeneuve doing a Dune movie.
Yeah.
But that has to handle things right, particularly for this story, has to handle the Bene Gesserit right. If I like the vibe of the Bene Gesserit in Dune the movie, then I'll be excited about the sisterhood. If, however, I'm like, Dune, great movie, didn't love how he treated the Bene Gesserit, I'm going to be a lot less excited about the sisterhood. So I'm not trying to say I'll feel one way or the other for sure. But we haven't seen any of this. So
yeah, just, it's all unseen. It's purely faith in the fact that that guy seems to not make bad movies. And that's all we've got to go on.
I'm not going to be afraid that he's going to make a bad movie because fear is the mind killer.
Right.
Fear is the little death.
Right. And he has earned this because I don't know anybody.
Turn and face my fear.
I don't know anybody who said, oh, my gosh.
Over me and through me.
They're like, I can't make Doom again or Dune. It'll be bad. Nobody said that to me because they all know this guy's involved and they all trust in him. In Villeneuve, I trust. Vive la France.
So how about Vive la France? Okay. Employees of the French Forest and Hunting Office have been hunting and capturing the legendary cat-fox hybrid on the French island of Corsica. Did you know about the legend of the cat-fox hybrid?
Never heard of it until today. It was amazing.
The cat-fox hybrid is kind of like the chupacabra of Corsica. It is blamed for, you know, the death of your chickens and whatnot. And within the past couple of decades, people have started to find out that it's real, that people weren't making up the cat fox. It's longer than a domestic cat. It has larger fox-like ears, has highly developed canines, and a tail with 2 to 4 rings and a black tip, more like a fox than like a cat. Since 2016, the office has identified 16 cat foxes on the island and captured 12 of them, examined them, and released them. French wildlife officials are hoping that by capturing, studying, and tagging the animals, they can get these cat foxes recognized as a real species and protected.
Wow. I'm looking at pictures, and I would think that's a cat first, and I wouldn't even apply fox to it until maybe that profile picture down there where he's laying there, sort of, I can see a fox coming out of
there. The problem with photos is a lot of times it's hard to tell size from a photo. I think the reason that everyone called them cat foxes from the beginning and just saying, it's just that instead of just saying, well, look, a cat, is probably when you see their size, you're like, it kind of looks like a cat, but it's as big as a fox.
Mm-hmm.
Foxes are a little bigger than cats.
Yeah. It's am I wrong in seeing that that has different eyes? Like one eye is a, oh, that's cool, dude.
Well, this one anyway. Yeah. I don't know if that's typical of the species or not.
All right. Look, we are famous here in the Hogle Zoo, our local zoo, for having a, one of the only stuffed and also lived in captivity here. Ligers. That's a big deal here.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We've talked about this on DTNS before. So we're famous for this liger. So I feel like I'm predisposed to hybrid animals. Although we're not necessarily saying some cat and a fox got it on.
No. In fact, cats and foxes are not close enough species to be able to interbreed. They're not like horses and donkeys or anything. But there is some evidence that this is a convergent evolution, probably a cat developing fox-like traits.
Yeah.
But nobody knows why.
Yeah, it's very odd. His ears are cool. I mean, I'd take this over the cat we have now because he's kind of a jerk. I'm just putting that out there.
Does he outfox you?
No,
all the time?
He's just an a-hole. He's just a jerk. He'd be cooler if he was a fox, because then at the very least he could be like, I don't know, what do foxes do? What's good about them?
What does the fox say?
What do they say
about the cat fox?
Something like that. Oh my gosh, that meme! I think that meme was actually laid to rest in a grave, and we've desecrated the grave today.
Unholy, yeah, we have done unholy work here today. I apologize.
Oops. Oh well.
But yeah, cat foxes. If you want a less geeky, more sciencey take on cat foxes, they covered this on This Week in Science last week.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we don't often overlap with This Week in Science because they actually know what they're doing when it comes to science.
Yeah, so. Dr. Kiki's actually really brilliant when it comes to these things. She probably has about 500 things to say that we can't because we don't know. But if you want to learn more, check out This Week in Science.
I believe this was in Blair's Animal Corner.
Oh, all right.
With Blair.
Oh, nice. Blair, the animal specialist person.
What you got, Blair? All right. Simone Gertz makes many wonderful, stupid robots. He calls them another word that maybe your kids don't need to hear. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not going to make that decision for you. Simone Gertz wanted a Tesla pickup truck. She's like, I want Tesla to make a pickup truck. I know Tesla says they're going to make a pickup truck, but I'm looking at my watch. I'm Simone Gertz. When are they going to make a Tesla pickup truck? I can't wait anymore. I'm going to make it myself.
Mm.
She made her own Tesla pickup truck. She transformed a Tesla Model 3 into Truckla. Spent a year in the planning and design, got assistance from a team of mechanics and DIY car modifiers. This was well planned, well executed, using experts to assist her, and ends up looking a little like an El Camino. I mean, from the front, it's basically still a Tesla Model 3, but it's all truck in the back. It's got a bed and everything.
Yeah.
If you're wondering, Elon Musk says Tesla will release a pickup truck later this year, but too late. Simone Gertz beat him to it.
Pretty awesome. She's great anyway.
Oh, yeah.
She is also does a bunch of stuff for tested.com. So if you want to get more from her, they do lots of sort of crossover. But I'm used to her doing like, hey, I turned my coffee machine into a garden hoe or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like stuff like that. But this is like, huge.
I know this is ridiculous, but it was fun to do. And honestly, turning a Tesla Model 3 into a truck is a little bit ridiculous, but fun to do, but on a grand, grand scale. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, first of all, you got to get the Tesla. Nobody's giving those away for free. And you got to like get that thing going. I say grats to her. It's actually kind of cool. I would drive that. Look at that. Look at that car chat room I gave you a link for just now.
I mean, it's a Ranchero, right? Teslachero?
Truckla.
She went Tesla Truckla. I think that's probably a good name.
Yeah, that's probably fine. I wonder is it no answer from or no word from Elon Musk? Does he have any feelings on this? He says a lot of dumb stuff on Twitter. It might be a fun one.
Yeah, if he has said anything about this, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
And she was very careful to be like, look, I don't want people to think that I'm wasting a very expensive car. Like, this is still going to be a useful car. This is a real way to do this. So, of course, who was it over here in Altitude pointed out she's still battling brain cancer.
Oh,
Simone Gertz, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
I mean, I don't think you're ever done with brain cancer. So,
no,
yeah,
not really. Not the long-term effects of it. I hope I had no idea. I hope that's a thing that's in hand for her. That sucks. But also, listen, if someone came to me and said, Scott, sorry, You got brain cancer.
Sidian says it's not brain cancer, just invasive tumors. And this is what I get for believing what someone types in a chat room.
Oh, so it's a type of cancer, just not a...
It's not brain cancer, which is a type of cancer. She has tumors in her brain that are cancer, but not brain cancer.
Right. And those are rough.
It's not in her brain. It's just invasive tumors.
Yeah. Even if it's not malignant.
You all seem to be the smart people in your chat room being able to sit there in the peanut gallery telling us what's what. Get it right.
Yeah, get it right, you guys. Get together and have a meeting and come up with the answer. Anyway, awesome stuff. Go look at it. You can find that up on The Verge.
Well, we've been wondering why Avengers Endgame didn't have a digital release yet or a Blu-ray release. And it turns out it's because it's got a new theater run. Same movie. But Kevin Feige told Screen Rant, if you stay and watch the movie after the credits, there'll be a deleted scene, a little tribute, and a few surprises.
Ooh, what do you think he means by that when you hear surprises? What do you think?
Yeah, the deleted scene I have on not good authority, but on like extremely rumory authority, that it would be some kind of Tony Stark scene similar to what Thanos has when he sees young Gamora, except Tony would see older Morgan.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
The tribute, all the best bets are that has to do with Stan Lee, right?
Yeah, that feels, yeah.
Surprises, I don't know, like outtakes, gag reel, who knows? I have no idea what they would do.
She-Hulk shows up in her lawyer clothes and says, I'll take the case, and then they cut to black.
I put on my robe and Hulk She-Hulk hat.
Is this, okay, so the grand question is, does this drive people to go, are you going to go again for this? You've seen it three times, right? In theaters. Are you going to go?
I want to. I would like, I've been wanting to see it again. And I've rewatched all the Marvel movies since I watched Endgame.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I went through and I watched Hulk and Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3. I watched them all.
Wow.
And I got to Captain Marvel and I kind of strung Captain Marvel out over a week. Because I just happened to get to it in my rewatch at the time that it came out on digital. And I was like, well, I guess after this, I'll have to go see Endgame. And then I kept putting it off. When am I going to find 3 hours? That's the problem. Finding the time to actually go see this 3 hour long movie is the issue. I want to see it again. And giving me a good reason will make me more likely to do it. Right.
Yeah. My first place position.
You know what's interesting? I looked up Avengers Endgame. It is now available at my local movie theaters. Starting Friday, which it wasn't when the last time I looked, but it doesn't tell you you're getting new stuff. Like, how do I confirm that I'm not just seeing?
Oh, right. That's a great, because you don't want to get in there and wait.
I see it. I think if I see it Thursday,
yeah,
I just see the regular movie, right?
Right. Yeah,
but it shows me Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I can, and even today,
it needs a little seal or a little something on the.
Yeah.
Marquee or something that has to say, this is the one with the bonus content, or else you're going to piss off fans who go for 3 hours and don't see the anything change.
Yeah, like
they
go Thursday night, assuming it'll be like a preview version or something, and then get really upset.
Yeah, that's not going to go well. So whoever's in charge of that, think about that. That'll be important.
But I'll contact my friends at Fandango.
You might know someone there, I'm thinking.
I might. Actually live with someone from there.
Good point.
I might be married to someone from there.
Oh, good. I was hoping it wasn't that guy in your basement.
Disclosure.
Yeah.
I am married to the head of video production at Fandango Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a pretty sweet gig, I think.
Being married to Eileen is a pretty sweet
gig. It has its advantages.
That's all I got. That's
all right. I was going to say this. If I go again, it will be no surprise because I would totally see it again for this, plus my comfy position in first place in the movie draft can use all the extra ticket sales it needs.
Sure. Yeah. No, if I go, I will use a discount code from aforementioned employee of Fandango and not contribute any money to you.
Oh, great. Well, I'm going to use my hard earned money and go see Lion King the minute it comes out. So,
Me too.
Yeah.
Good man.
I'm actually excited for that.
Everyone should.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Pre-sales are hot. So,
They're hot for a Disney
animated
live action.
Breaking some rules.
Animation. It's not even live action. Yeah. I guess the settings are real.
A lot of them.
The desert is real.
A lot of it.
None of the animals are real, though.
That's true. A lot of green suited people playing animals but in beautiful vistas where they do it. And then maybe some digital back painting stuff. But for
so
the,
it's,
you know,
it's live ground, live dirt.
Right. There's a bush
live
or a tree.
Plants.
Yeah. There could be some plant, some foliage that is
live foliage.
Movie, live foliage. What movie is this? Oh, it's a live foliage film. Mm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, these are all excellent stories, and all of which I think are actionable. People can go look these up and check these out, and I wish you would.
Yes, you can sue for about them.
Exactly. Don't get too litigious, because our friends over on our Reddit page are the ones putting it together. Tom, who should we thank this week for helping us out?
This week, big thanks to Jeff Rose, Very Understated, and A Whatnot, who all submitted stories that we used in today's show. You could be them. Or at least you could help them be them by voting up the stories at currentgeek.reddit.com. Even when it's, you know, a couple weeks away, as it will be tomorrow for the next discussion episode, you got to get in there and vote. Good stuff in there. And we love hearing what you want to hear us talk about.
Get in there. Rolling, 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 rolling. Hey, it's time for a new segment on the show. It's not new anymore. We've been doing it for a while now. This is called Keep on Roland, where Tom reads Scott a passage from French literary critic Roland Barthes. Nope. Barth. And his seminal work, Mythologies. I keep wanting to call him Barths. But you're just doing a possessive there, and I should notice that. Anyway, Tom's going to do that now, and I can't wait, because this stuff has filled me with both glee and sorrow at the same time. Go.
Well, I'm going to try a little higher difficulty level this week. I'm going to read a little bit from the beginning of the essay, The Poor and the Proletariat, and a little bit from the end.
All right.
So, Charlie Chaplin has always been the proletarian under the guise of the poor man, hence the broadly human force of his representations, but also their political ambiguity.
Okay.
This is quite evident in the admirable film Modern Times, which Scott has seen.
I have now. Yeah. And by the way, really liked it too, by the way. I thought that movie was great.
This is quite evident in the film Modern Times, in which Chaplin repeatedly approaches the proletarian theme, but never endorses it politically. What he presents us with is the proletarian still blind and demist and mystified, defined by the immediate character of his needs and his total alienation at the hands of his masters, the employers, and the police. Now I'm going to jump ahead here a tiny bit to the end.
Feel free.
For Charlie Chaplin is in a cell, pampered by the warders, and lives there according to the ideal of the American petit bourgeois. With legs crossed, he reads the paper under a portrait of Lincoln. But his delightfully self-satisfied posture discredits this ideal completely, so that it is no longer possible for anyone to take refuge in it without noticing the new alienation which it contains. The slightest ensnarements are thus made harmless, and the man who is poor is repeatedly cut off from temptation. All told, it is perhaps because of this the Chaplin man triumphs over everything, because he escapes from everything, eschews any kind of sleeping partner, and never invests in man anything but man himself. His anarchy, politically open to discussion, perhaps represents the most efficient form of revolution in the realm of art.
Wow. I don't know what any of that meant, but I feel edified by it. As usual. I mean,
that look, you are now politically woke because you watched Modern Times.
That's all I want to do is push for weird factories and that kind of government that he was.
Or you're in a pre-revolutionary haze of the petty bourgeois. It
sure
might mean that.
Okay. What if I want to eat my soup from a machine that wraps around my neck and then sort of feeds me as I sit
then
there?
Then you are definitely in a pre-revolutionary haze of the petty bourgeois.
Great.
Or and probably the proletariat, if you want to do that.
People hearing what I'm saying there are like, what? I'm telling you right now, go watch that movie.
That's the thing.
Yeah, watch that movie. It's fantastic. All right, that's all well and good. Hey, check it out. The show is brought to you by something, and it's you. It's not brought to you by a donkey or any of those things.
Not yet.
I said donkey, but anyway, it's brought to you by you over at patreon.com/currentgeek. We have this thing we send out every month with unique art on one side and a membership card on the other. These are for Current Geek subscribers only, and it's the only place you can get it. That artwork and, of course, our signatures, which you can then take and try to use at our banks or whatever and screw with our personal lives. No, don't do that. We would recommend not doing that. In fact, I made it so you can't, because I got it all watermarky on there. That was at least my thinking. Hopefully that works. But anyway, enjoy those. And for those who have not checked out what is available for those of you looking to support us, you can go to patreon.com/currentgeek and give us your support today. We'd appreciate it.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right, Forecast used to be a show. It's now a segment. We predict the future in lots of different ways, lots of avenues of thought. And I really like today's because I think it's true. So, Tom, explain it, and then let's talk about it.
Yeah, we were talking about Waterworld and Harry Potter and Universal Studios earlier. My prediction for Forecast this week is that theme parks, as they continue to try to outdo each other in immersion, will become total immersion role-playing events that LARPers will laugh at, partly with joy, as the masses begin to enjoy what LARPers have enjoyed for decades, which is the immersion of becoming a new character. You will enter a park with a new identity in the future for whatever your thing is. Let's say it's Harry Potter. You won't just go visit Harry Potter in your t-shirt and jeans and shorts. There will be maybe specified times or days or certain passes where Disney right now prevents you from cosplaying. You can't dress up in a costume, but there will be special times when they will require you to be in a costume of some sort to enter and just blend into the world that you're visiting.
Do you think that it will have to coincide? Because the way LARPing works right now, you've got weapons with foam on it and nobody's really hurting each other, but it's a big leap of imagination. Do you think that this will have to coincide, this increase in what you're talking about, with technology or something that allows these parks to be more immersive so that perhaps there are projections so that when you fling your arm forward and say firebolt, an actual firebolt appears to come out of your hand and create an explosion?
Okay, so my guess is that it will not be LARPing the way classic LARPing is thought of, which is you battle each other with foam swords, right?
Right.
It'll be less about fighting. Think about the theme parks you go to now. You are generally not fighting. You're generally not shooting anyone. Nobody else is shooting anybody, right? You're on a ride that gives you a level of experience and rarely agency. There are more rides now with the technology we have with NVIDIA cards, with virtual reality that can give you more agency, right? So the Millennium Falcon ride at Disney's Galaxy's Edge lets you fly the ship. In the past, you would have just got in and you would have been a passenger and, you know, some projection or version of Chewie and Han would have flown the ship and you would have got to be in there with them and you would have flown through an adventure. But now you get to do it. And that will continue to happen. And so the experiences won't be built around necessarily battles, although there may be designated areas where you can do stuff like that. And maybe it's kind of a laser tag sort of thing. I don't know. I'm not sure how fantasy work, how it work with swords, but maybe you can do some sensor, you know, thing like fencing has. But I'm guessing it'll be focused more on, you know, the smuggling and sneaking around and meeting a person and solving and getting a quest, right? You could actually go get quests from NPCs, like living human being NPCs, and go out. And that's something Disney's doing with their Disney Play app now, where you can actually like scan things and build up points and take jobs. And that will just become with augmented reality, with virtual reality, something that you could just do and become and subsume yourself in for the time that you're in the park.
I'm into it. 100% into this idea. I think that makes that park, the value of the park, go way up. Maybe the prices go up too. But as it stands right now, going to Disney, which you just did, you bastard, I forgot to chew you out because now you've been to Galaxy's Edge and the rest of us are just, Tom Merritt. Bruh. How was that, by the way?
Well, that's my best thing of all time this week.
Oh, so. I should shut up then.
I was holding off on that.
That's right. I saw it earlier and then forgot you did it. What suddenly makes the extreme expense of a good park visit like Disney or something gain more value for me is stuff like this, ideas like this.
Yeah. And Harry Potter is the same way where you can buy a wand. And if you buy a wand, you can then do things that make stuff happen in the park.
Yeah.
Because it uses some motion detection. There's a little tip on the end of the wand that it can see. And if you do the right pattern, then it'll actually like turn some, you know, some stuff will animate in a window or this or that. I mean, that's just the barest version of this. We're going to have so many more possibilities with augmented reality, with sensors, with projections. It's going to be theme parks are just going to get more and more immersive.
If I was a LARPer type, I would be so excited about what the future of AR could be. Not maybe not what it is yet, at least for them, but what it could mean for their favorite pastime. They're probably flipping out.
I imagine if I'm a hardcore LARPer, I'm gonna eschew this. I'm gonna be like, nah, that's not really LARPing. Mm. That's lame. If you want to do it, you got to do it right, because there's a whole culture around that. But I think there will be a little sniggering about like, those people are doing, you know, we've known about this kind of feeling forever. Mm-hmm. And you didn't get it until you had somebody else create the entire world for you.
This is true. I like it a lot. There's your prediction, everybody. Put that in your calendar.
And Mark, smoke it.
How soon? Give us a date. How soon for something like this?
For what I'm describing with that total immersiveness where you can just walk in AR, 15 years.
Okay. We'll still be around. We can go do that.
Yeah.
You and I.
On our little motorized scooters.
Yeah, on our little, what are they called? Joey's, or they have a name.
They have a name. I can't remember it either.
Jimmy's? Riding your Jimmy? Nope, that's not it.
They'll be called Jimmy's. That's your prediction.
yeah, I'm going to change. Go to Walmart and ask if I can use a Jimmy. I can't remember what they're called. They're called something.
You just get a kid walk out with freckles. Yes, sir. Did you want me to carry you around?
Oh, there it is. Stickers in the chat. A Lil Rascal. That's what those are called. The Rascals.
A Lil Rascal.
Yeah. I don't ever want to ride one of those.
Don't ask anyone to ride you.
Straight up, no. All right. I love this segment. So here's this. It's the best thing of all time this week. And this week we talk about things that we love right now because they're happening right now, right in front of us. So, Tom, what do you like? What's going on?
I spoiled it already, I guess, didn't I? Galaxy's Edge. I got to go to the Galaxy's Edge section of the Disneyland theme park in Anaheim, California on Sunday. It was the last day of reservations. They've changed it. Up until Sunday, you had to make a reservation. Now, the reservations sold out quick when they opened them up. Mm-hmm. But the way we hacked around it is we booked a hotel room at one of the Disneyland hotels, which then would give you a reservation for Galaxy's Edge as part of your reservation for the hotel. So we got one for Sunday morning, which apparently is the best one to get. Even though you have to get up early, you're the first one in. Mm-hmm. So the lines are going to be shorter for the first thing you want to do. And it is incredible. You are on Batu, kind of a deserty planet. You are in the town. Every cast member, which is what they call the Disneyland employees, is in character. When you go buy a Coke, they say that's 21.05 credits. If you want to pay with Apple Pay, they're like, yeah, just tap your data pad there. The Coke bottles are round and they have that Star Wars script on them. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. We basically have to choose when you go in. Do you want to get in the long line to spend $200 to build your own lightsaber, the long line to spend $99 to build your own droid, or the long line to spend $50 to $70 on a drink in the cantina that comes with a souvenir thing that you get to keep. We went to the cantina. Mm. And so Eileen got a tiki drink that comes in a big ceramic tiki mug that depicts the Return of the Jedi fall of the Death Star. Lots of Ewoks on there. It's called the Yub Nub. That's the drink. I got the Rathtar's Teeth, which is a beer flight of 4 samples of beer.
Yeah.
Served in Rathtar's teeth.
Oh my gosh.
And apparently the Rathtar's teeth are now sold out. I got one of the last
ones. You got one of the good ones then. Nobody likes Ewoks. Well, Eileen does clearly. Actually, sure, hers looked really good in that Instagram photo I saw. It looked great.
Yeah, yeah. The blue milk, just kind of tastes like a slushy.
Yeah.
I'm not blown away. It does. I think of blue milk as being milk.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that doesn't taste very good. So that's probably why I didn't do it.
I call that.
You know,
I call that,
people just like, I'm not paying $5-$10 for a glass of milk.
I just call it skim milk. Blue milk. Yeah. It looks like to me.
The Smuggler's Run is the only, there's going to be 2 rides. One called Rise of the Resistance is not open yet, but the Smuggler's Run is open. And that's the one where you actually get into the Millennium Falcon. And you're paired together with 5 other people. So Eileen and I were always with 4 other people. They give you assignments to be either a pilot, an engineer, or a gunner. There's 2 of each.
Oh my gosh.
And then you can swap. We swapped a couple of times with people so that we could do one of each. And each of you have a different thing. So the engineer just looks for things that are flashing and flips switches to stop them. The gunner button mashes. Unless you want to not do automatic. If you don't do automatic, then you can like point your gun. But otherwise, you're just button mashing. And the pilots, actually, one of them flies up and down. One of them flies left and right.
Oh, wow.
So they have to actually communicate to make sure that you don't crash the Falcon and stay on course and all of that. It's fun. You're flying the Millennium Falcon.
Huh.
I got to like pull the thing and go into hyperspace. It was crazy.
That's really cool. I've heard really good things about that. I mean, is it just a, like a screen? You're not out on a roller coastery like mechanical thing. It's a screen.
No, it's bucking you around as you, you know, if you run into stuff or get shot at or whatever, you know, so it's one of those situations where you would normally just be strapped in and you would see things on screens, but it would look like you're looking out of a window mm-hmm. and it would, you know, buck around so that you feel like you're really flying, except you're also controlling it.
Mm, that's cool.
And it's these high res panels, 4K panels, powered by NVIDIA processors. So you're playing a big video game.
That's really cool. I do want to try that. Quick question. I don't know if you know this or not. They had that Star Wars Galaxies thing, whatever it's called, that was over in Futureland.
Or Tomorrowland. Star Tours and Hyperspace Mountain?
Yeah, Star Tours. Did that get moved or did they just keep that there?
It's still over there. It's weird. Tomorrowland has a launch bay, which is where you go to check in when you want to go to Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah.
And a souvenir shop and all the Star Wars stuff, Hyperspace Mountain, as they calling Space Mountain right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to walk to the other side of the park to get to Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, it's that stuff seems really cool. Well, I'm glad you got to see it. You guys look like you're having fun. And honestly, the video or the shots that you guys took, I never felt like you were surrounded by too many people.
No, and that was one of the nice things about the reservations is it was a crush to get in. People were like running to get in because they wanted to be first in line for whatever their thing was.
Yeah.
But once we got in line, we got into the cantina right away because we were first up the day. Mm-hmm. And then we had the rest of the 4 hours to just mill around. And we went on the Smuggler's Run 3 times in a row because there was virtually no line.
Wow.
Now it's open to the public, which means it can get overwhelmed, but they're limiting the number of people who can go into it to try to preserve that feeling so you don't feel overwhelmed.
That's a good idea. I'm glad that they did that. I can't wait to see it myself. For me this week, my favorite thing of all time is me being brought back to an era of video games that I miss.
Aww.
Back in the mid to late 90s, first-person shooters were new, and they were all the rage. And on the heels of Doom came Quake, and Quake was the first polygonal, first-person, fully 3D FPS experience. There just was nothing like this until then. And right on the heels of that, there were a couple of games, one based in the Doom engine called Hexen, and a game called Heretic that was based on the Quake engine. And they were basically sequels to each other in a weird way, but they were fantasy shooters. So they were magic and electrical powers and demons and stuff. It wasn't the normal Doom or the normal Quake kind of arrangement. I was huge fans of that stuff. Loved it. Played the multiplayer constantly with my friends at work. We'd just turn everything off at work and just fire up all our PCs, run our DOS commands, and play Hexen all night. It was great. So to my excitement and somewhat astonishment, a little game came out on Steam called Amid Evil. This just barely came out last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a straight up, in every way, a spiritual successor or tribute or whatever you want to call it to those games. And it looks like it. It uses, you know, everything's super pixelated. It's not going through and doing a bunch of GPU pass stuff on making everything look like realistic surfaces or anything. They've kept that there. The speed is just lightning fast, like we would all do with our Pentium 3s back in the day. And the gameplay is like, oh my gosh, I'm carrying a staff again and it's firing lightning at these creatures and I'm playing Hexen all over again.
Nice.
And I love it. It's really good. And it just brings me back to that time, which is very specific time in shooter history. I don't begrudge where shooters have gone. I think they've gotten more refined, more interesting, better paced, all that sort of stuff. But it's fun to be just thrown in this fray. And the only thing it's missing is multiplayer. I would play arena games with people constantly if that was a thing. So big fan, and it's cheap. It's like $16 right now. So it's called Amid Evil. It's on Steam and probably other places. And I was very happy to be playing that this week.
So it's a medieval game.
Yeah. It's literally, I mean, they're playing the game. They're playing the word game here, right? Amid Evil, kind of.
Yeah.
They've separated it weird.
I love that.
It's really cool. So check it out. Amid Evil. Go watch some videos if you're curious. I did some stuff on Twitch. I think those VODs are still up if you want to watch me play it. Otherwise, plenty of that to go around. All right. That's going to be it for today. Hey, quick note. Legal Geek swings in this week yet again. because he's reviewing the Supreme Court decision from this week striking down the ban on registering immoral or scandalous trademarks. Not immortal. Those are fine.
Trademarks do last a long time.
This is true. And so what defines an immoral or scandalous trademark? Like, there's a lot of questions about that. I'm sure that this affects people who like to have funny websites that are maybe a little rude, you know, that sort of thing. So definitely check that out and see what you think. Legal Geek coming up right after we finish here. He does great work. You should listen to him. And next week, it is that time of the month, everybody. Current Geek Film Festival time. And we are doing 1949's The Third Man.
You're going to hear this a lot when you're watching The Third Man.
Oh, yeah. That's Tom Merritt on that side playing it, and it sounds really good on our new video thing. That didn't sound choppy or bad at all.
Nice.
The Third Man, never seen it, have no idea, don't know what to expect. We just saw 12 Angry Men, now we get to see The Third Man.
It's not Juror 3, though.
No, it's not him.
Like a spinoff.
Yeah. No. Thank goodness. I'm tired of that guy. I don't want to talk to him anymore. But The Third Man, and it is part of our list of the best films of all time, and that's coming up next week right here on Current Geek. If you would like to watch us live and you're listening at home thinking, yeah, that could be fun. I could hang out with the chat and say things. We have a nice little group here on Tuesdays. You can check us out Tuesday nights. That's at 5 p.m. Mountain Time, 4 p.m. Pacific. And go to frogpants.tv. That's our. That'll take you right to the Twitch channel. Tom Merritt, anything else before we go, sir?
Yeah, man. I'm having a lot of fun with me and about, I don't know, 40 of my friends over on my writing Patreon at patreon.com/acedetect. We have about 36 folks now that I share secret files with from a story called Vera. I've been leaking out these files to people. I hope I don't get caught by the secret intelligence agencies, but it will allow you to understand the ins and outs of the secret world government that runs everything. You want to find out about that, or if you just want to live like a sheep, it's up to you. But patreon.com/acedetect to sign up. And you can also find updates about it in the free Tom newsletter at freetomnewsletter.com.
Nice. All I would say is if you want to find out when more shows like this one where I host them or talk in them are playing live, you can go over to frogpants.com/podcasts. And there's a link to the calendar right there. It gets updated all the time. So you'll always know the latest and the greatest from me, Tom, and others like us. That's going to do it for us, everybody. Go to currentgeek.com in the meantime. Next week will be a new show. Thanks for everybody. For me, yeah. For Tom, and for everybody. We'll see you next time. Thanks for me and for everybody.
I'm thankful for everybody, too. Yeah. I think that's lovely.
I literally said thanks for me first, though. What does that even mean?
Thanks for me for being here.
Yeah, thanks for me.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we review this week's decision of the Supreme Court striking down the U.S. law banning registration of offensive trademarks. Just about 2 months ago, this segment covered the oral arguments in this case, in which the Supreme Court considered whether the ban on trademark registrations for so-called immoral and scandalous marks was constitutional. This appeared to be a direct follow-up to the 2017 decision, in which a similar ban on disparaging marks was stricken as unconstitutional by the court. The court appeared to be struggling to distinguish these two types of bans from one another during oral arguments, and that indeed played out in the final written decision. Justice Kagan wrote for a 6-3 majority and started with a blunt assessment of this case and how it relates to the 2017 disparaging marks case. She stated that the court holds that this provision banning immoral and scandalous marks infringes the First Amendment free speech rights for the same reason as that disparaging marks ban. More specifically, that it is a law disfavoring ideas that offend, which discriminates based on viewpoint, and that type of speech restriction is nearly impossible to uphold under First Amendment precedent. So as many legal scholars expected when the disparaging ban went down 2 years ago, the ban on immoral and scandalous marks fell quickly behind. The particular challenger to the law is Eric Brunetti, who owns a streetwear brand called FUCT. So he will benefit much like the band The Slants and the Redskins football team did when the disparaging mark ban was stricken as unconstitutional 2 years ago. as he will be able to proceed to register his trademark at the U.S. Trademark Office. But this decision also signaled that the floodgates may not be open to all offensive marks forever. To this end, the dissenting justices made it clear that they favored a more narrow reading of the law to make the scandalous part of the trademark ban viewpoint neutral and therefore constitutional. The U.S. government had argued that the scandalous ban could be maintained if it was narrowly applied only to marks that are obscene, vulgar, or profane in their mode of expression. And Justice Sotomayor indicated that such a narrower ban would likely be constitutional if presented that way. The majority opinion did not strongly dispute this point of the dissent, but simply made the point that the law is written broadly now and has to be evaluated in that sense, making it clearly unconstitutional. Justice Kagan wrote that the majority's decision says nothing at all about a future law, limited to banning merely a smaller set of problematic marks like lewd, sexually explicit, and profane marks. Justice Alito, in a concurring opinion, specifically observed that Congress could now write a more carefully focused, narrow law that precludes registration of marks containing vulgar terms that play no real part in the expression of ideas. So while it's clear that the Lanham Act's prior broad bans on disparaging, immoral, and scandalous trademarks is finally dead, it will be interesting to see if Congress picks up the issue to rewrite the scandalous ban to be narrower and perhaps okay under the Constitution's First Amendment protections. The court has certainly opened that door in this decision. The bottom line is, while this court decision is a win for consistency in the laws, and a win for those who seek to register marks deemed more risque or scandalous, the door may not remain open for truly lewd, obscene, and profane marks if Congress responds to the court's seeming invitation to present a law with a more narrowly tailored ban. So long term, this may only be a temporary victory for marks like Eric Brunetti's FUCT clothing brand. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.